the world of football is huge, and we need a table, a stage to bring to the people these insights and curiosities and craziness of football, of an American player that plays in Ireland and of a Brazilian that still hopes his hair grows back and then he'll be able to tear it apart again when Brazil wins the 6th World Cup.
Goal! Leading the conversation on the global game. This is World Football on the BBC World Service.
Hello, I'm Manny Jasmi and welcome to the first programme of 2023. Pat Nevin's on holiday and was last seen swimming with dolphins off the coast of New Zealand. I hope he made it back to dry land. But after, well, probably 2 months away, the former USA international Heather O'Reilly is back. And Heather, in the last week or so, you've had Christmas, New Year and a birthday. Are you still blowing away the cobwebs?
Well, it's great to be back. And yeah, today's the first day of getting back to work for me, Manny. So I couldn't be more happy to be here with you guys. And let's have an awesome 2023. I'm excited for it, but mostly just happy to be back.
Right, that's the pleasantries out the way. Let's get down to the juicy gossip and the explosive story in US soccer currently involving Greg Berhalter, who was the coach at the World Cup, and his wife Rosalind, and their two close friends, Claudio and Danielle Reyna. Claudio, who was their best man. But Danielle has admitted to telling US Soccer about an incident of domestic violence by Berhalter against his wife when she was his girlfriend 31 years ago, which Berhalter immediately acknowledged. Danielle Reyna said that she blew the whistle in frustration at, quote unquote, the betrayal of Berhalter, who, after the World Cup, kept alluding to her son Gio's poor attitude after not getting much game time in Qatar. Berhalter's contract ran out at the end of the year, and US Soccer says that no decision will be taken about his future until an independent investigation has taken place. You probably know all the characters in this story. What have you made of it?
Oh, geez. Well, what I have made of it is that no one wins in this situation. First of all, this is my university, Manny. This is University of North Carolina that these two women were roommates at. So it's hitting very close to home because obviously, you know, and I would never condone violence or domestic violence, but this was 31 years ago. And this was an incident that was reconciled. They have a successful marriage of 25 years. And to bring up old dirty laundry, 30 years in the making, is just something else, in my opinion. And no doubt, did the World Cup go a way that probably frustrated Gio, probably frustrated his family, especially with having like close ties between the families. I'm sure that there was frustrations. And I think that they're frustrated that his name did get dragged in the mud. But this was just a low, low, low maneuver. And one that I just think is nasty. I think as a youth coach right now, I'm actually coaching this under 15 boys team right now. And, you know, we put on all these rules about, you know, managing the parents and the communication between the parents and the coaches to make sure it's a healthy environment for the players. You put the player first, right? And now this is happening at the highest level. These adults are supposed to be beyond this, are supposed to be past this, are supposed to be role models and far more mature. And this is like youth soccer gossip at the absolute highest level. And it's just really sad and honestly pathetic day for US soccer.
How must Gio be feeling? Because this takes the embarrassing parent act to a whole new level.
Oh, he must be mortified. He must be absolutely mortified. I mean, sort of, you know, doubly mortified, I would say, because, you know, one, he didn't play much in the World Cup, which is disappointing. Two, then he's having to do a little bit of reputation damage control because it gets out that he was immature during the tournament. which he has admitted to and apologized to his team about. So, you know, he is a young person. He should be given a little bit of grace. And maybe he didn't face adversity the way that he should. But, you know, that was, you know, embarrassing, I guess, to all of a sudden be kind of pegged as a problem child. And then now you're dealing with being known as, you know, that player whose parents got involved in a big way at a World Cup because of playing time. So he's dealing with a lot of baggage now that I don't think, you know, 2 months ago he was dealing with. So I think he must be mortified. I think there's a lot of work to be done between these, you know, families, and hopefully with time people kind of put this behind them and Gio gets back on the field and continues to do what he should do at a professional level and matures into a role of being a complete pro, because obviously right now he's far behind that. And I have no doubt that he will. I mean, like I said, he's a young person. I don't know about you guys, but I was doing some dumb things myself at age 18. And I'm glad that I wasn't judged for the rest of my life because of some things that I did back then. So,
well, that's the point, isn't it? Because both Greg Berhalter and Gio Reyna have done things that they won't be talking about on after dinner circuits in 30 years' time. Berhalter, when he was 18, Gio Reyna's 20, but still young, two young guys who did two very different things, but neither of which they'll be proud of. But what about Berhalter? Can he return now as the USA coach, even if the investigation clears him? And if he does, can Gio Reyna play for him?
Before this, honestly, I would have said that Berhalter should be given a new contract. I think what the U.S. national team did during the tournament was admirable. I think to get out of the group was the goal, and they reached it. The draw with England in a game that they perhaps outplayed them. So going, you know, a month ago, I would have said that, you know, Greg deserves another go. And he's done some really good stuff. This, you know, which is not his fault now, but what was his fault is that he did speak at the conference about a young player, and then that got leaked out because everybody knew that he was talking about Gio. So he made a mistake. He made a mistake, one that he probably regrets. And then, you know, it obviously snowballed, and he had no control over that snowball building, but he made a mistake, you know, speaking about in-house things at that conference. And that is something that I don't think that he can recover from because of all that's kind of come with it. So I don't think he will rebound from this, sadly.
Now, let's reflect on a week of mourning in Brazil as Pelé was laid to rest. He lay in state for 24 hours in the centre of the pitch at his former club Santos's stadium for the public to pay their respects. And on Tuesday, people crowded the route as his coffin made its final journey to a private funeral with his family. If you heard our tribute to Pelé last week, you will have heard the heartfelt words of journalist Ricardo Setion. And Ricardo was among the mourners and joins us again from São Paulo. What was it like from your point of view, Ricardo?
Really sad from one side, and on the other side, it was a moment to celebrate someone that's influenced, inspired me personally, and I know that so many other people. It started in Qatar when we heard that things were not going well at the hospital where he was from the 29th of November, just a week and a half after the World Cup started when we were in Qatar. And the feeling was that he was getting close to the end. We prayed, everyone thought in the most positive way until, of course, we knew it was irreversible and the question of preparing yourself. But, you know, you never know how you're going to react. And on the Thursday at 3:27 p.m., 29th of November, of December, a date, an hour, a year that I will never forget, the news came that he passed away. And it's like something that you can't explain. It's, of course, losing a relative, losing someone close. And you have the mourning, and you have the shock, and you have the period of people recalling his amazing numbers and features and successes. In Brazil, between Christmas and New Year's Eve, everything is very lazy. No one works, really. And also the very 3-4 days. So I think Pelé passed exactly in the right time. Exactly when everyone was away of work and had the time to swallow down those bitter news. And then, of course, as you know, the request he made in life, as always he said, he's not afraid of death. He just didn't like it very much. Very simple way of someone who was always simple in his ways. And he demanded a few things. The first thing is that his funeral be opened for the common people. And the second is that, if possible, that his body be left for a funeral in the center, in the very center of the pitch of Villa Belmiro Stadium, where he played 288 times with the jersey of Santos, scored 210 goals. Exactly the same dot, in the same circle, in the same midfield, where he, in October 1974, went down on his knees on the 31st minute of the second half of a match against Ponte Preta of the city of Campinas, went down on his knees, opened his arms, said thank you, and abandoned football professionally. And the third thing is that no one touches his cupboard, his place in the dressing room, that no one opened, and until today it remains. So it is very touching, very emotional. After the funeral, where I was for 16 hours in the stadium, then the procession that took, instead of 2 hours, took 6 hours under a heat of 37 degrees, and then in front of the memorial where he was buried. I'm still tired, but I'm very happy that I took part in this period of his life, and happy to be alive, to see these things, to see how the people showered him with love in the streets of Santos. That was something that I've never seen before.
And what about the decision by so many ex-players not to be there? Only one player from the last two World Cup winning squads was there. What did you make of that?
This is one of the hardest questions you ask, because there is a lot of people that don't like Pelé, and that must be said. A lot of people in football were jealous. There are people that didn't like his expressions, phrases, criticism, comments that he made during the years. And on the other hand, you have players that seems not to like to be criticized, and so they give back. I think that only three world champions were there. First and foremost, one of the most decent men in the world, and the guy that scored the goal that brought a tie against Uruguay in the World Cup of 1970, when Brazil was traumatized of meeting the same team of Uruguay that destroyed our national team in 1950 at the final of the World Cup in Brazil when we lost. We met them again in 1970 in Mexico and started losing. The ghost of Uruguay was above us, and Pelé passed the ball to Clodoaldo, his companion in Santos, number 5 on his jersey. So Clodoaldo was there, played 8 years in Santos with Pelé, and world champion in Mexico. Who was there also was Lima, the Joker, as we call him, because he played in every position in Santos and also in the national team of Brazil. He was world champion sitting on the bench in 1970. And Mauro Silva, who was champion of the world in 1994, but went there mostly as a politician, because today he is vice president of the Sao Paulo Football Association. And that's it. No other world champion. I counted yesterday the amount of world champions of Argentina who went to Diego's Maradona funeral when Diego passed. And it is something that we should be ashamed. I counted at least 28 world champions at Maradona's funeral. So the question is, why they didn't come? Why no one of 2002? Nobody, not a single one. And no coach, no Pereira, no Scolari, nobody. On the other hand, you have the procession, the convoy. Instead of 2 hours, it took 6 hours. So many people were in the streets. Young people, people in wheelchairs, elderly, people in the windows. And it was superb. A shower of love, as I said. The firemen that were at this red truck were crying during the whole way. And then I went to the memorial where he was expected and was buried. And there were 4 players there only. But, you know, I think I spoke personally with 2 world champions of 2002, and I will ask you to respect the fact that I cannot name them. 2 big guys, one of them very big. And he said to me that he thinks this is all hypocrisy and that people should not judge. But during life, many people criticized Pelé. So what people expect us to be there and be a two-faced person or being not honest with ourselves. We didn't want to be there. We respect, we liked, we enjoyed his football, but, well, I think it's a scandal. I think this will remain for a long time, especially, above all, players such as Ronaldo, Romario, and Neymar, the best ever. Kaká and Ronaldo, both of them, when they won by FIFA, the trophy of best player in the world. I repeat, Kaká and Ronaldo were on that stage of FIFA, and Pelé was invited to handle them the title, and they were not here. Neymar, with his jets and helicopters, did not come and was seen at the eve of the funeral in a party in Paris, while Mbappé and Hakimi were in New York, so he cannot say that Paris Saint-Germain did not allow them to travel. Very hard. Robinho lives in Santos. Didn't come. Very hard, Manny. Very hard to see, and I believe many of them had good reasons. Cafu was traveling, was in Frankfurt. But 99% of them, where were they? Why they didn't come? I cannot explain. And history will tell. History will make them pay. And seeing people in wheelchairs, people that couldn't walk, standing 3 hours in line. That was the best answer to all these players that did not understand that Pelé opened the way for us to have 3 stars, and now we have 5 stars in our jersey. I think he deserved 5 minutes of each and every one of those world champions and so many others who didn't go. So that's what I think, Manny.
Heather, Pelé was born in Brazil, but do you think that actually he belonged to the world?
I do. And, you know, that's not to take away any pride of South America, of any pride of Brazil, but this was a name that resounded throughout the globe as the best ever. He inspired people to take up the game. He inspired people to love the game. From my own perspective, I can vividly remember, and you know, growing up in the 80s and 90s in the U.S., there wasn't a ton of soccer on TV, but I knew Pelé. And my parents had, like, you know, old school encyclopedia volume is set up in our living room. And that was always, you know, what we would use for school projects and things like that. Obviously, I loved soccer. I loved football. So every school project I would do on Pelé. Because he was the only player that I knew and that I could research. And I can vividly remember as a little girl, like laying on the carpet and just reading every word of this encyclopedia article about Pelé. And so he, you know, influenced, I think, my career in a way, very subconsciously, I think. And so because of that, because he was so global at such an early time in the game, he is, you know, the world's hero. And yeah, he definitely belongs to the globe.
And that must be a source of great pride, Ricardo, for Brazilians.
Yes, I think Pelé is Messi, Ronaldo, Mbappé and Maradona in one. I think that comparing Pelé with Ronaldo, with Messi or Mbappé or Zidane or Platini or Cruyff or whoever you want is kind of unfair. Because when Pelé did what he did, 1,283 goals, when Pelé did 92 hat-tricks, when Pelé won 3 World Cups, the ball weighed almost 2 kilos. And the pitches were like potato plantations. Very hard to play. And the boots had wooden little parts on the bottom. I don't know, the cleaves, I don't know how to call that, which were hammered with nails. And they hurt. And the boots themselves weighed around 1 kilo each. Today they weigh 400 grams. So comparing him with Maradona, Messi, Ronaldo, whoever, is just completely absurd. And I just want to tell you a story. Pelé, in one of his advertising, he advertised a kind of a vitamin brand for many years. And I remember crying and shouting and kicking the table at my house, asking my mom and my dad to buy that vitamin, because I dreamt that if I take that vitamin, I would be a little bit like Pelé. That was the guy that we had and brought us to be part of the planet. No other Brazilian reached even his ankle. And of course, you remember that when the United Nations at the end of the 80s made research of the most famous brand on earth, it was Jesus Christ, a very famous soft drink, and then Pelé.
Well, in the last few weeks, Lionel Messi has won the World Cup, Pelé has lain in state, and Cristiano Ronaldo has signed for a club in Saudi Arabia for a deal reportedly worth $200 million over 2 years. He's now a player at Al Nassr, the country's 9-time champions. Heather, Ronaldo said that this isn't effectively the end of his career going to Saudi Arabia. And I guess you might agree with him, because you took a step down in terms of playing level last year by going to play in Ireland.
Yes, I have to admit that I was very surprised by this move for Ronaldo. I think, you know, it's eye-watering amount of money. I mean, that's an incredible payout. So I don't blame him. But what I do blame him on is over the last couple of months, some of the things that he said. And then this move, I don't think, it doesn't equal up. You know, you don't do the Piers Morgan interview and say things, you know, like that you've got, you know, great football ability still in your legs and you can play in the best leagues in the world and that you don't care about money and that you still want to compete at the highest level and then do this move. I think, you know, each one of those things is fine, but you can't do both of them. You can't say one thing and then do another. And yeah, I mean, listen, it's a lot of money. It's a choice that he's made. It surprised me. I would have loved to see him, obviously, in the U.S. I thought maybe an Inter Miami move for Ronaldo would make sense in my mind. But clearly, what Ronaldo has in his mind is what he's going to do. And I have to admit, I was shocked by the move, just considering how competitive he is. He'll bag a lot of goals, no doubt, but, you know, you still need to tap into the joy of playing, which obviously he has a lot of still in his heart. Obviously, we saw him, you know, so passionate at the World Cup, you know, for different reasons, maybe not getting the time that he wanted, not getting all the starts, not getting, obviously, you know, winning it. But he still has this incredible appetite for the game and an incredible appetite to compete. And I think he'll face a lot of frustrations in this decision that he's made.
Ricardo, Lionel Messi is now just 25 goals behind Ronaldo, and he's 2 years younger. A lot of money, obviously, that he's getting. But how important to Ronaldo do you think is this goals record that currently he owns above Messi?
I want to first of all agree with Heather in every single word letter she said. It's perfect. You cannot do both things at the same time. I want to add something because, as I know Cristiano and I know people that work with him, that there is a bit more to the story than people might evaluate. He broke a relationship with his lifelong agent, Jorge Mendes. So Jorge Mendes, today the most important agent on earth, was not responsible for that transfer. Second, he thinks of his future and he wants to have the same level of life he has today. I know he has money for 20 lives, but subconsciously that was an influence. And I know that he will not end his career in Saudi Arabia by all the informations I have. So he is a very competitive person, as Heather said. He is extremely convinced that he can play at least 3 years more. That's what people close to him said. So I think he's going to be still in the news, still scoring goals, and still giving us very, very fun moments. And you will see, he will do his very best to write history in Saudi Arabia, playing against unbelievably weaker sides and weaker players. He will be able to do his tricks in fantastic ways. Just wait and see.
So what's the CR plan then, Ricardo? What's in store for Ronaldo after Saudi Arabia if he isn't going to end his career there?
I am sure that one season he will play there. The second season I'm in running doubt. The list of clubs that ask him to come and play just now after the World Cup is around 33 clubs. Out of those 33 clubs that offered him concrete money, at least 10 are very serious. And yes, two sides from the US, and yes, two sides from the UK, and other clubs. Now, he will definitely do all he can to play in Europe again. And I think that by the dramatic way he lives his life, and he loves some drama, he loves to take big steps. He loves to shock. He loves to show his body. He loves to show his face. He loves to score goals and jump beyond everybody else. I think he's preparing a dramatic comeback. So I wouldn't be surprised by seeing Messi following up his career to the US after playing in Paris Saint-Germain, while Cristiano will surprise the world because he knows that now is not his moment. The decision to go to Saudi Arabia means go back on the Shen Tzu art of war style, retreat, regroup, rearm. And we'll see when he comes back. He's going to make a dramatic comeback. That's my view, my information, and that's his plan. That's why he cut links with Jorge Mendes, the man who created all the path of Cristiano throughout Real Madrid, Man United, Juventus. That's a big step. And that means that he wants to write a new page in history, and staying a year or a year and a half in Saudi Arabia is not bad at all. It's quite wise from his side because he's not ending his career there. That's 100% sure.
It's something to look forward to, Heather, isn't it? Just when you thought that Ronaldo was winding down his career, it turns out, according to Ricardo Setién, that this is just a breather. So we'll look out with interest to see what happens next. But from Ronaldo now to the story of the former Kenya midfielder Martin Imbalambalam. He played for the national team facing a young Mohamed Salah 10 years ago, and he captained AFC Leopards, one of Kenya's biggest clubs. But one morning, when he woke up to go training, he asked his wife to turn on the lights. The lights were already on. He picked up his phone from the bedside table, but he couldn't see the screen. Overnight, Martin had gone blind.
It was terrible because I couldn't imagine that I've lost my sight. Yesterday I was in training. I was with my family, but that morning I couldn't see anything. I couldn't see my wife. I couldn't see my brother. And it came to me with a shock. When I reached the hospital, the doctors told me that there was nothing wrong with my eyes. So they injected me and told me that after 30 minutes, I will regain my sight. But till now, I haven't regained my sight.
What's a huge contrast when you compare it to what your life was like when you could see, when you moved around an awful lot, far more than most sighted people, because you were a footballer?
Yeah, it crossed on my mind because each and every time I was to go for training, go for matches. So it was now time that I cannot move alone. I cannot see what's happening. Somebody can give you a ball and you cannot kick, you can be hurt. So it really hurted me. But one day I tried to go and coach my village team, which many people couldn't imagine that a blind man can coach a team. But in my heart, I had that experience. It came on my mind that even if you are blind, you can do something to help those other young people who wants to be maybe one day like you.
What did they think of having a blind coach?
Some couldn't imagine that our coach is blind, but others were happy, saying that if a coach is blind and is coaching us and we are winning matches, so what about us who are not blind? That was encouraging them to do more. So they were giving 100 plus in the pitch and we were winning matches. We were playing the branch league and now we are playing Vihiga County.
So you got promoted?
Yeah, we were promoted. From 20 teams, we merged number 2 and we were promoted.
How does that make you feel in terms of value and worth that you returned to football when I guess you probably thought you never would?
Many players who maybe they get injuries, they think that it's over for them. No, you cannot play football, but you can help somebody play that football by encouraging him, sharing that experience that you have. So I feel great because I've helped the young boys to be where they are. And I know that they are going to do even better than me when I was still playing football. So I feel great.
You played for Kenya against Egypt back in 2012 when a very young Mohamed Salah, who wasn't an international superstar, was making his way. He scored in a 5-0 win for Egypt, who's only his second goal for Egypt. What do you remember about that game?
I remember that match because it was a tough match for us. Mohamed Salah was still young. He was the shortest man in the pitch. But what he was doing was fantastic. So that game I can't forget. It was a tough match for us, but he gave us something because we went and played against Senegal. We drew 1-1 and we played against Guinea-Bissau. We hammered them 2-0. So it taught us something positive.
How your life has changed, Martin, since those days?
My life has changed, but not that really. When I didn't accept that I'm blind, it was hard for me. But for now, I think I'm back in life. I can use a computer to access any information. I can read using my finger, the braille lesson. And then I can walk with the guide of a white cane to assure those people who thought that it's the end of Martin. No, this is a new Martin. It's like I'm a newborn baby. And with the support of my friends, especially Kefwa, I can help my family. For sure, I've learned that disability is not inability. Even if you are blind, you can do something and be better than that person who have the full sight.
The former Kenya international Martin Imbalambalam with a very important message. And now Martin works with KEFWA, the Kenyan Footballers Welfare Association. Heather, there are career-ending injuries and then there are life-changing moments. But how amazing to hear that 4 years on from 5 years on, in fact, from this huge event in his life, Martin found a way to come back to football.
I love it. I think that he was very candid and honest that he did have a long grieving period, I think, of what his identity used to be. And like you said, it took him nearly 4 years to come to the realization that it won't look the same. It won't be the same, but it can still be beautiful and he can still impact the game and he can still impact lives. And I think that it's incredible that he chose to stay in the game and he chose to use his gifts before the accident, the incident, and his gifts now after to really, leave his mark on these young people. It's an incredible story, one that I think started as a tragedy and ended in a happy way and in a way that, you know, fills your heart.
Let's end by looking ahead to 2023 and what we hope for the year to come. Ricardo, in terms of football, what do you hope to see in 2023?
So the first thing is that the world stops comparing Pelé to the rest, and it'd be the first year ever that it's consolidated that the king of football, His Majesty Pelé, is really from another planet. That would be important for his legacy. Even if it sounds funny, it is important that, as many people say, Pepe, the player of Santos who played with him in national team, and Santos says, I was the best player, because Pelé was not a player, he was a god.
Oh, now I'm going to sound real selfish because I have a wish that the U.S. women's national team home the World Cup, the first team ever, I believe. And Ricardo, you would probably know the answer to this on the men's side. Nobody has won three in a row. So this would be the first ever, men's or women, to accomplish this. I think that they have a good chance, but it will not be easy. So that is my wish.
Thank you very much indeed for Ricardo again to come on the program. And if you missed our Pelé tribute, it's still available as a podcast. Some great memories of the great man on that for you to listen to and download. Thanks to Heather. Great to hear your voice again after all this time. We'll be back next week. Until then, goodbye.
Goodbye. Nice to
goodbye.
World Football is a BBC Sport production for the BBC World Service.